We're discussing data, analytics, machine learning, and the Island Enterprise Browser with Matt Cochran, Director of IT at Hendrick Motorsports. They're one of the top NASCAR teams, and he takes us on a tour behind the scenes looking at this data. You have about 600 users that IT supports and manages. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Probably closer to 2,000, 3,000, plus machines that we utilize and probably 300-ish servers, to kind of give you an idea of scale. We built our first data center when I started in 01. We outgrew it. But built a brand new one in a new race facility that we bought, built here on campus in 2005. And this was still when, we were seeing a lot of physical iron before really the virtualization phase kind of kicked in. And, it was pretty impressive back then. Now, everything's kind of consolidated down and certainly to the cloud as well. And that's all part of being, agile.
You have such a diverse user base. You have engineers, you have mechanics, you have your office workers. Can you talk about the collaboration and the productivity aspects?
You look across the organization, we have a lot of degreed engineers here. We have mechanical engineers, we got aero engineers, we got electrical engineers. And then you've got the traditional business systems on top of that, when you have finance, marketing, PR, facilities. We've got a huge transportation issue, because we got to get to 36 races a year. And so we've got, a bunch of fleet of haulers, race haulers that we got to maintain. We got a fleet of aircraft we got to maintain. We've got a hangar over at our Concord Regional Airport that, we've got an awesome staff of pilots and mechanics and folks to keep us safe and get us back and forth to the track. And so there's a lot of different systems in play, a lot of custom and proprietary systems too. So you can imagine, there's not a whole lot of engine shops out there to, devote writing a bunch of software, from a commercial perspective on. And so a lot of the systems are proprietary and in-house developed. And how do we, expose all that and really collaborate around all that data? We rely on our partners and sponsors and things, because we do live and rely on the stickers on the car, not just from a monetary standpoint, but from a business and eco standpoint as well. And so you look at Island, for example, the productivity increases that we produced off of that product, we're able to say yes from an IT department. So often an IT department is cornered into saying no, or that's a security issue or what have you, when internally we really want to say yes. We just hadn't had the ability to do so, right? And so with a partner like Island, we're able to say yes a lot more and increase that productivity.
What you're describing is like a breath of fresh air, because as you said, so many IT departments simply default to no. How does this approach enable you to say yes more often?
So it's really about the toolkit that you have. You think about why we had to say no in the past. Well, it's because so often that it was a huge financial burden to enter the space to be able to say yes, provide the end user what they need and in a manner to do so securely. And what's interesting, I think, specifically about the Island browser is once you have it installed, you've got this last mile toolkit installed on your machine that IT departments can then light up individual components or configure in a manner in which you're saying yes more often, right? Because at the end of the day, what the end user is trying to get to is a piece of data, whether that's a photo, whether that's a database, whether it's a Power BI dashboard, what have you. It's most likely in today's world is going to be presented via that browser. From an administrative standpoint, it's as simple as going into a single console and a few clicks, and we're able to say yes, and we're able to say yes in a zero trust environment in which we have full control, auditing, and ability to report on.
Can you drill into this? What is it about the enterprise browser that enables this productivity gain and enables the simplicity that you're describing?
From an end user perspective, right, we all use a browser. And if you're using a modern browser today, it's all built on Chromium. It looks and feels very similar, whether you're using Chrome, Edge, Safari, Firefox, you name it, it feels the same, right? And so for Island browser, there's zero overhead as far as user training is concerned. It feels right at home to the end user. And so we take a layer of complexity away from the end user. From an administrator and an IT standpoint, what we're looking for is not adding additional administration burden. How can we take burden away? And how can we audit and really allow access to all these resources and do so in a manner that we're not having to open up ports on an internet-based firewall or outer edge. We're simply using that broker that's already in place just to enable that end user one access to a specific resource. You're really getting that finite data or layer of detail into what you're trying to expose to that end user. And then from an IT perspective and a security perspective, we've got a whole lot more granular control over what that end user is able to view, present, and then copy or print or do whatever. And all of that is part of that critical last mile that we've never really had access to from an administration standpoint in the past.
So from an IT standpoint, you have a far greater degree of control than in the past. But from an end user perspective, they're operating in the browser as they always have. So the transition is far easier.
Absolutely. Ultimately, if you're giving somebody something they're asking for, in this particular case, they're asking for access to maybe a particular resource or application, we're now able to say yes. Well, that immediately is going to give some increased awareness and want to use the application, because now you're giving me something I need. But from an end user perspective, I'm also giving them a bunch of added benefits and productivity increases. For me, as an IT executive, I'm having to constantly deal with budgeting and putting in requisitions or purchase orders, all that kind of stuff, right? I'm constantly copy and paste. But the Island browser, the copy paste manager inside of it, I think you can have 50 different copy and paste your previous history of your copies, and I can go and grab them as I need to. The other one, password management. Now we're able to provide a password manager for our user population that's standard, that we know is secure and it's good policy. And so we start adding these little productivity increases to it. And before you know it, it becomes a tool of choice.
It sounds like user adoption happens very naturally and organically because there's a close fit between what the users need and what the tool, the browser, and its associated elements is providing.
Absolutely. Obviously, there's a lot of press and a lot of things in the media about large language models, and AI is really becoming more of a household topic. But at the same time, you got folks that has never really used it asking for it. Hey, we just like to use large language models to help us create a more pointed email or check my spelling a little bit better, or grammar. How do I increase my communication? And we were able to say yes immediately with the Island browser because, hey, it's got an AI assistant built right into it that doesn't send off all your intellectual property to the cloud. You now have people coming to you asking for it. And that's a great feeling as an administrator.
I was going to say, as an IT person, having end users coming to you and making friendly requests because they like what you're doing, that's pretty darn good.
So it's a good feeling to say yes. It's a good feeling to give productivity and time back to your end users. And ultimately, that gives them time back to make a difference in what they're really doing. And in our case, that's winning races and winning championships.
What about cost savings and consolidating tools. How much do you think about that issue as you're running your IT team?
Everything has a litmus test, you know, that comes to me. And, you know, is this going to help us go faster and win races? And if the answer is that's yes, then we got to prioritize it. And so the nice thing about Island is we're not having to spend time and energy opening up ports on a firewall, making sure it's all documented, all the regulation that goes into those kinds of things. Because with the Island browser, we're not opening up any additional ports, right? We're just adding that access on a very strategic profile-based level.
Earlier, you described data and car racing being data-driven. Can you tell us about the telematics and the data associated with the races?
The interesting thing about NASCAR, is that they've always had a focus on the human aspect, right? The man and machine, a man, pushing that machine, to extreme measures. And, we've always wanted to kind of keep that level of that aspect of the sport. And then, you look at, the newer generation or younger generation of folks that's coming along, today's cars, they all have computers on them and they all have data flowing in them. And from a young person's perspective, they like to be able to plug in and maybe tune their car, right? And so there's, a new generation of performance enthusiasts out there. And, and I think it's important to keep up with the times. And so NASCAR said, okay, hey, we know the teams want this data, but how can we do this in a manner in which we're paying homage to the sport, but also keeping the playing field equal for everybody? And so they work with a company called SMT, and basically it's a GPS-based system that's tracking the car all around the track. I think it's down with I forget the exact, but it's like a less than a meter of accuracy. And then they plug into the ECU and they're streaming, I think it's about 10 channels worth of data. Not a great high fidelity of data stream, but it's a decent data set. And the interesting thing is you're not getting that just for your car. You're getting it for all the cars, right? So they said, we're going to give it to you, but we're going to give it to everybody. And everybody's got everybody else's stuff, right? So playing feels equal. Now, the difference is, how do you handle that data? And what are you doing with it? How do you consume it? And how do you make it an actionable data set? And so we think about what's coming across the car. Obviously, GPS position, so we know where the car is on the track at all times. We know throttle position, steering angle, brake pressure, yaw of the car, all these, several different things. And it's streaming in, right? And we consume that data in a multitude of ways. SMT itself has a graphical analytics application where it shows a 3D rendering of the car, where it's at on the track. And on the other side, we got all these different data streams, and we can overlay and really start to see our car and our driver's performance against other cars' drivers and performance. And so that's the data sets coming in, and we're looking at that in more of a real-time environment. But we also get the raw feeds coming in. And so that raw data set, we stream all that to, via JSON, and we stream it into a database, and then we're using analytics on it to try to come up with nuggets of information out of that, almost like a data mining kind of thing. And, then you obviously have your predictions and, how the race strategy is going to go, and all that's kind of playing in. But at the end of the day, it all is coming through the browser as an endpoint too.
So you're gathering very large volumes of real-time data.
Yes.
And then you mentioned that it's streaming through the browser. How does that work? Paint that picture for us.
It's basically just a cloud resource. Right, all this data is going to the cloud to be processed in some form or fashion, and then represented to us. And you've got all the teams and probably I would say on average, probably 4 or 5 individuals per team that's consuming this data real time and in that graphical format, you know, via the browser. It's just like going to a web page and viewing this information. But also inside the browser, we can pull up, our simulation data, our prediction data, our, trends and stints and, graphically plot it, in different manners. Because for different people, if you're, let's say you are an engine tuner, the data that you're looking at is very important to just a very specific set, right, of criteria. Whereas if you're a race engineer and you're looking at strategy, it's totally different. We analyze a ton of photography, for example. I think we get something like 7,000 images a race. It's crazy how much, just data photography we get. And you got to be able to process that. A human cannot process that amount of data that quickly, at least to bubble up the pertinent information. And I think that's the key is, we got to get to a point where we can consume all this data effectively. And really the difference on the track today's in today's data-driven sport is how fast you can consume that data and not just consume it, but create actionable data sets and get that information to the crew chief and the race engineer actually on the pit box so that they can make a, a race-winning decision. And if you're looking at a place like Bristol, where we just went to a couple weeks ago, it's what, 15, 20-second lap times? That's not a whole lot of time to decide whether you want to pit or not. Key up a microphone or radio and let the driver know, hey, come on in and pit. We got to do that right now in less than 15 seconds. It's pretty intense.
So this is all happening real time during the race, and you've got your various team members analyzing their sets of data.
Absolutely. And not only that, you look back, I think it was 2015-ish, they opposed roster limits, right, at the track. And so now you have to be a member of the team or on a roster spot in order to get into the facility if you're on the competition side. Funny enough, IT was on that, right? And so now we can only really send one IT person, or if we want to send two, you got to pick somebody else, so maybe a mechanic or a pit crew member. Somebody's got to stay home if you're going to send somebody else. And so now, instead of sending 75 or 100 people to the track, now we're going to send 50, but you still got the same amount of information coming at you. You still got the same amount of work. And so now we come up with an operation center so we can do things remote. And we've got all that data coming back into our operations center as well, right? And we can consume that data in a better thinking environment. It's not as noisy, not a lot, you don't have the environment going on. And you've got a ton of your friends sitting beside of you that you're pounding off information with, and then we're able to consume it all and then get it to the engineers and the crew chief on the ground at the track. And like I said, though, you got to do it real quick.
And so what's the role of IT in all of this?
If it plugs in or it's got a computer chip and it doesn't work, IT is going to get the phone call, I promise you. But I think about back in 2001 and some of the folks in the mines that we had here, they were already thinking about the forefront of the sport and where it was going, and they knew it was going to become more engineering focused and data focused, and we needed an IT department in order to get to that data, because you got to have your foundation before you can build up. And so we spent several years building that foundation and then adding on applications and the productivity, and then you start to see it kind of go. As an IT professional, we've got really three groups on staff, and that is software development and engineering, who's developing our machine learning models and things like that, as well as our custom-driven applications. Then we have a business and applications group who handles our ERP systems, our engineering applications, our BA-type resources, so that we can kind of bridge that gap between racing and the competition side and IT, because sometimes we speak different acronyms and data sets, right? Yeah. And then on the operations side, it's just everything from cybersecurity to networking and administration and audio, video, and just everything that goes into it. Just the amount of technology at the racetrack now is, I feel like it's probably 100-fold from when I first started. Just one pit box, kind of give you an idea. I think there's probably about 15, 20 monitors on there, and probably 6 or 7, workstation class machines, and a server on each pit box that pulls in pit stop information and breaking down footage. And, we got to get all that information back home so we can analyze it quick.
Matt, you mentioned machine learning. You're dealing with such large volumes of data. Where does machine learning come into play?
We think about the 7,000 photos, for example. How do you go through and sort all that, right? As a race engineer, you may be only specifically looking at maybe your car or maybe a competitor's car, and you need to be able to surface, thousands of photos, but you might only be interested in 2 or 3. And not only that, how do we compare, one car against another? Well, an easy way to do that is machine learning. Let's think about you're in the middle of a race, and all of a sudden, one of your competitors start picking up speed. Well, as a crew chief, that might be something that you're interested in knowing, right? Like, okay, this guy just picked up speed. Well, why? Did he just pit and take 4 tires? Or did he, maybe he's backed off or changed his driving style a little bit. Maybe he's backing up to turn, letting off the throttle a little bit earlier, or getting on the brake a little bit sooner or later, depending on the track for the turn. Or maybe he's changed his line, maybe just a little bit, right? And all of a sudden he's picking up pace. Well, that's pertinent information that you want to relay to your driver, right? Hey, the 18 car just moved up a half a lane, and now he's dropped his lap time, a tenth. Maybe you want to try that exact same line, see how your car reacts, right? And so all that's kind of information that has to happen, and you can't do it, times 36 cars every lap, but a machine can. Right. And it can pick up that information and bubble it up to you. And you also have to start doing more predictive analytics as well.
Trackside operations are intensely data driven. Where does Island and the Enterprise browser fit into the track?
All that data resides in the cloud, right? And so you got to have an entry point. We're obviously going to use a browser to do that. So we need to make sure that browser is secure. But besides that point, we look at the workflow in general, right? And if you're a race engineer and you've got these massive monitors in front of you and you're trying to call a race, in the past we've had a bunch of different applications running, consuming memory, consuming resources. And so if we can prevent having the multiple applications running on their machines and causing resource constraints, we can do that via the browser. And certainly Island does that. But how much can I do inside the browser? Well, from an Island perspective, I've got remote desktop. I've got remote command line console capabilities via remote, and it hits that same broker that gives you access to other resources. You're doing the same thing for a remote desktop, right? So we can quickly get access to information back at the shop, for example. Typically speaking, if you're in the corporate environment, your competition is typically separated by at least buildings or cities or, heck, even oceans. But for us, it's a self-policing sport simply because your competition is no more than 5 feet beside of you, right? Your staunchest competition is 5 feet from you and can see your computer screens, right, if you're not careful. And so, how does the Island browser, protect us there? Well, you've got the ability to do watermarks, for example, the transparent watermark. So if data gets leaked out and takes a picture of a screen, at least I will know, based on those watermarks and barcodes, when it was taken, which machine that it was taken from, and the user that was logged on, and all the associated timestamps.
It's really fascinating. As you were describing, your intense competition is 5 feet away. And so your cybersecurity posture obviously must address that.
Yeah, absolutely. With you know, Zero Trust built into the browser, you know, that's a big thing. And the other big thing is the anti-phishing capabilities of it. You know, once I saw that, I think I was sold on just that one feature because, you know, in today's time frame, the bad guys are using AI. They're using it to beat spam filters and anti-phishing filters and you name it, right? And so we constantly get pounded. And there is no way that, you know, you can constantly stay up to date with whatever somebody creates, a GoDaddy domain name and, you know, stands up a phishing domain and it has all their DMARCs and SPF records and you name it, and it looks legit, right? It's coming in. There's nothing you can do to stop it from making its way to the end user's inbox. The interesting thing about the Island browser is once they click that link and they go to start typing in their domain, you know, their email address, as soon as it sees, because you do have control of that last mile, you can see what, you know, what's going in. And it's not that Big Brother's watching, we're not. But as they start to, type in that their email address, it's going to stop them, right? It's going to pop up. And as an administrator of the Island browser, we got an option. We can either allow it with just a warning, or we can prevent it from happening in the first place. So say, no, you're not going to use your corporate email address to enter in this phishing website. You know, even if the end user don't know it's phishing, it might be legit. And so just that alone, right, will prevent, you know, an intrusion.
And this security posture then is enabled by the fact that you're so strongly cloud-based and you're using the Island Enterprise browser as the intermediary, so to speak.
Absolutely. It's the last mile. It is that connection. And when we talk about enterprise browser, the first question that comes to mind is, why do I want to pay for a browser? Well, try to take away out all that bloatware and the trackers and just everything that's inside of it, because those companies, the Microsofts of the world, the Googles of the world, they're monetizing that information. It's not free. There's never a free lunch, as my dad would say. And so they're going to monetize that. And with Island Browser, you get rid of all that mess. And so it ends up being a faster user experience too. Being a cloud-first company and being able to be agile and adopt and create these new applications and get it to the end users quick. One of the side effects of that, though, is you end up with, where's my data? That challenge we were able to come with the Island Browser, because you can build custom home pages, right? And this was one of my CFO's biggest wish list items. How can I use this so that my end users quit asking me, you know, where their financial reports are, right? And so we were able to build custom home pages based on user groups in an Active Directory group, right? If you're a member of finance team, you get this loadout on your homepage with all your business icons and reports, and everything's laid out as a standard. And it don't matter if you're on your work computer, your home BYOD device, or your mobile device. It's that same experience. It's the same location. I know where to go to get my stuff. And it's a different one for if you're an engineer or if whether you're IT, right? And so it really gives us the ability to just be productive out of the box, right? Out of the get-go.
You love data, whether it's the telemetry coming from the cars or the telemetry coming from the browser. You love data.
I love data. We love data. We eat it. We love spreadsheets around here. Man, we will consume it if you give it to us. I promise you that.
Well, Matt Cochran, Director of IT for Hendrick Motorsports, thank you so much for giving us the behind-the-scenes tour of data at your organization.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a lot easier to look and see who's on top of the mountain. Know that that's your goal and to get there, right? You know what you got to do to get there. But then when you get there, how do you stay there? Because now everybody else has got their eyes on you. And seeing how you got there, well, how do you keep innovating and keep pushing the envelope? And I think that's what we got to do just to, you know, stay relevant, stay competitive, and, you know, stay on top of that heap. You know, we definitely got to innovate and be agile and, you know, embrace the change.
Great words of advice. Matt, thank you again.
Yes, sir. Thank you.